So we have no Matthew with us today.
Yeah, he's at the Apple event.
Whatever that means. I don't think there are any Apple events, but not that I know of.
I think it's a fruit convention. It has nothing to do with computers.
I didn't think about that. I bet you're right.
It's just, you know, today's topic is probably Fuji's.
And pink ladies. Fuji's and pink ladies.
Is that a type of app?
It is. It is.
So what I've never understood about apples, why do they always put those silly little stickers on them?
So you could ring them up at the register.
It's another bureaucratic job given to somebody out of misplaced compassion.
So when you put them in a bowl, all that happens is somebody takes an apple out, they take the sticker off, and then they stick it to another apple.
Who does that?
I don't know. My girlfriend does point out to me repeatedly that when I take those stickers off bits of other fruit, that they are found strewn about the kitchen in various patterns and whatnot.
Yeah, they're stuck to the counter and they never go in the bin.
You know what it is? It's the number is on there, the ID number.
Right. It's the SKU for the person up front, so they can charge you the correct amount for the apple.
No, we don't get those. We get little stickers that tell us it's Golden Delicious.
Yes, but on there's a little 4-digit number.
Yeah.
No.
So they plug it in and know exactly what the price is.
No, we don't do that. They just inject our RFID tag straight into the apples.
And then you eat it.
And then we eat it. Because they're tiny. You don't notice that.
You don't even know they're there. So you're all walking around with like 62 RFID tags in your gut.
Yeah.
Are you talking
I'm a box of apples.
Great band from the 80s.
You know what they teach you in podcast school, besides the correct way to say podcast, is that the key to a successful podcast is sort of a regular and consistent production of your shows.
Yeah, so we've violated that several times.
We have. But, I'd like to think that people are just averaging it out, so they're taking the total number of episodes divided by the amount of time from the first one to the last one, that sort of thing.
Well, we last taped when? About in 98?
I think it was during the first Clinton administration, so I'm pretty sure that was a while back.
You say did I infer in your tone the first Clinton administration as though you're expecting
he had two.
Oh, that's correct.
Right.
Yeah. I am an Obama supporter, and I would have been offended by that.
if he doesn't change his staff at halftime, is that technically two administrations?
If he doesn't?
That's a good... I exactly know what he said. Yeah, so if it's the same crew, which I think rarely happens, usually somebody resigns or gets canned.
Not the president, unfortunately.
Yeah, oh my God.
if he doesn't change his staff at halftime, then surely it's one administration.
No, surely it's
not. Technically it's referring to each term and whoever is there. But I see your point. If it's the same people, wouldn't that still be the same administration? Same administration, yet different administration.
Which would mean, of course, that we're talk
right after this.
Obviously, in the 2 months from our last show to this one, all kinds of things have happened in the world of Bigfoot, because here we are talking about this crap.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been so much. MK Davis is now certifiably psychotic.
Okay, we're recording.
That's fine, man. Right.
So, well, I've been out of touch. The reason we haven't recorded, I've been really busy. Then I was out of town for 3 weeks in a row. And anyway, so somebody give me the lowdown. How was MK Davis? How has he gone around the bend here? I want to hear the story.
Paul, I'll leave that to you.
Go, Paul. Go.
Go ahead.
Paul.
Go. Oh, okay. I'll go.
Go, stop.
Well, first of all, let me just state that I've always liked MK. I mean, just one-on-one personality. Nice guy.
He's a very nice guy.
I mean, he's always had, in my opinion, this whatever that scientific term is for perhaps finding more than is actually in a photograph or a video image or a film image. I believe he has that disease, whatever that is called. But I don't know. It also seems lately that maybe in the last year, there's also some a touch of Biscardiism has crept in. Like, well, how do we keep this old juggernaut rolling? Oh, yes, there's been a massacre at Bluff Creek. Sure, sure, it's speculative. You know, it's just this whatever is wild enough or has no chance of being proven just to keep people talking about Bigfoot. It happens all the time in Sasquatchery.
Yes,
it shit, we probably do it to a degree, you know. But hopefully, from all this, hopefully we get closer to the truth. So anyway, for those who don't know, and I actually just got up to relative speed on this morning because I just heard these allusions to him. Is that him and his whatever the name of his cohort have speculated recently? I guess it was at the Ohio conference. Don Keating's, is that there was some type of massacre of a Sasquatchel at Bluff Creek. You know, it's so insane. I guess, you know, maybe we should just assume he's trying to be funny. It's so stupid.
And I absolutely don't have any idea. So hopefully I'm hearing this the way a lot of people are, which is in a clueless way. Why does he think there's been a massacre of Sasquatch?
Leads to the first question, I don't know if he really does or if it's just BS or he's having fun or whatever. It's so ridiculous. I cannot believe any person in a relatively sane state of mind could even contemplate that based solely off the film.
He sees it in the film?
Yeah, well, what he sees is, you know, the famed right thigh hernia is now being viewed as a possible gunshot wound.
Oh.
Yeah, as well as apparently some type of head wound. Where that would be, I don't know. But
that would be after he's put the two planks of wood together and tightened the rope to misshape the...
Yeah, yeah. Done by the Digger Indians.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just... I almost want to say it's not even – I mean, other than us talking about it briefly, I wouldn't even waste your time reading any more about it. It's so stupid and so – and if I felt there was a hint of humor intended, I would say, yeah, go ahead. It would be kind of fun. But it's just crazy talk is what it is. So yeah, apparently the scenario as, again, based on nothing but pure speculation – is that, I guess, Gimlin wiped out a bunch of Sasquatch early in the morning, and then he went back and then got Roger. And then as they approached the film site, there was one left, hence the injury to the thigh and the head.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
I've just figured it out. You know, remember the stick that he saw it was carrying a while ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a shovel. It's just finished burying all the other Bigfoots.
Right.
That is my question. Where did all the bodies go that Gimlin just unceremoniously shot down?
Roger and Bob were in the area for weeks. I mean, they'd run out of food at this point.
So, oh, I see.
They've just barbecued a lot of them.
That's not beef jerky.
Yeah.
This comes about because MK apparently got some new frames that are better quality than we've seen before from Patricia Patterson. And in these new frames, he apparently sees a pool of reddish water. And he's saying that that's blood.
Wow.
Now, of course, he's I don't know what the soil in that area is like, but I do recall that there was a lot of rainfall. I mean, it had been a lot of flooding at the time. Mm-hmm. So if there's any red, I suspect it's probably mud that's come down off the mountain.
Yeah.
That's just sort of washed into the area. But from this pool of blood, he sort of expanded the theory and, you know, the Digger Indians have been digging holes for the dead Bigfoot and everything else.
Mm. You know, the last time I saw MK was in Pocatello. And I think he presented in Pocatello. I think I'm saying that correctly. Anyway, he shows you these things on the screen, and he doesn't necessarily, at that time, it didn't seem to me that he was saying what it was that he was seeing. He'd say, what is that? Could it be this? I don't know. And then he'd show you the next picture. And it was sort of like, well, I never really said that it was X, Y, and Z. So is this a situation where he's actually saying that he believes that this story that he's come up with about Massacre, I mean, is he saying it that with finality, or is he just suggesting that it could be this?
I suspect that it's more a case of, oh, I wonder what this is. This looks like a gunshot to me, but, you know. I can't remember the last time he said anything for definite other than these aren't creatures, these are humans. I think that was the last thing I can remember.
The braiding and the...
And it has to be... they have to be humans, otherwise you can't have a massacre. The dictionary definition of a massacre is the intentional killing of a considerable number of human beings. So if they were just animals, then they can't be massacred. So it fits in quite nicely with the whole theory.
Yeah, it's Cuckooville, man. I would agree to respond to your question, Brian, that I think he is couching it in the speculative realm. But you might as well just be speculating that actually Bluff Creek is the top half of a UFO that landed 150 years ago. And Patty is merely the captain looking for the portal to get back in the ship to fly when she's walking away. It's so ridiculously...
People have said such things about that film, of course. There's the famous titanium skeleton claim and those sorts
of
things.
Sure, I coined the phrase "stay blobizations" this week.
Nice.
but these things are just the modern version of a blob squatch.
Right.
You know that they're getting. We can't see any more from this film. It's when you zoom in and zoom in and zoom in, you see nothing.
I think that it. You know, and we've had this in the past on the Bigfoot forum. I remember having a rather heated argument with someone who said they were seeing poles and the outline of a car door and things like that in the background. I taking one isolated frame out of a film, of any film, it doesn't have to be this one, it could be Star Wars, for God's sake, and just looking at it for 40 years, sooner or later you're going to start seeing stuff.
Yeah. I think the reason... The main reason why this has happened, why this incredible blossoming, if you will, of speculation happens, is because it is such a great mystery in and of itself. Is it an actual Sasquatch? Is it a fake? So we just get, you know, we spin our wheels on it and rehash stuff, and it's just, well, we got to, you know, to keep the interest or to keep that quest for solving it, sometimes... You know, certain people, and probably all of us to one degree or another, just, you know, what the heck? Well, it could be this. But when it gets so far away from any semblance of common sense, mm-hmm. It's time to get away from the hobby for a while, I think. Maybe, you know, pick crocheting, maybe golf,
coin
collecting. Right. You know, leave it for maybe a year. I don't know if that's really going to help with MK. I suspect an army of leprechauns might be viewed in the background sometime within the next 2 years. So, I don't know, man. Just I think it's also reflective of the state, as we have talked about before in previous shows. It's just not a lot of, you know, going on. Really. I mean, really substantively in the field, Sasquatchery. I mean, we're like taking these slim pickings and here I am probably talking for 10 minutes about a guy who thinks a bunch of big feet were massacred at Bluff Creek. And we're seriously talking about it. That's
about it. Those high-speed films you see of animal carcasses being decomposed in the woods.
Yeah,
that's especially what the Patterson-Gimlin film is. You know, and we're to the point where all you can see now is like the skull and the pelvis bone. You know, and everything else is gone. all the skin is gone, all the flesh is gone, and it's just still wriggling a little tiny bit. I think that's where we are with the PG film. I mean, it's something, something, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but something has to be done that is different with that film, that is not looking at the film. It's actually trying to make a film like it. You and I agree on this. We've said this 100 times. We're on different sides of the spectrum on whether it's real or not, but that doesn't make any difference, because there's only so much more you're going to be able to get out of that film, and I think we got it all.
And even with that, I think we both pretty much agree that even ultimately, let's say someone was able to do a recreation with 1967 material and the same type of film, I think ultimately, as far as hard scientific proof, it still won't conclusively rule out. Well, you could go, okay, you recreated it, but all you did was recreate an actual Bigfoot that was there, you know. So it would still have that wiggle room, but it would be interesting, I think, for people into the. I suspect it could be done, and I think it could be done fairly well, but no one's done it yet.
But we'll never know.
We'll never know.
We'll never know, because no one's going to really do it.
No, I think it will be done.
You think?
Because for the reason you stated, there's really not a lot of areas to go left with the Patterson film. So I think finally some TV producer, instead of concentrating on doing hacky, you know, worn-torn things, is going to look at that seriously and finally look at it scientifically and say, look, we need this and this, and this was available in 67, and we're really going to try to do this. And I think that will be interesting. However, ultimately, probably inconclusive.
I don't think that's going to happen, for the simple reason that I don't think any TV producer would find using 1967 materials interesting from an audience point of view. They'd want to cheat.
Well, I think, the issue is there's no money in it, right? I mean, no producer's going to do it, because they're not going to be able to sell this for anything. No one's ever going to commission that, because who's going to sit around for an hour or 45 minutes with commercials and watch someone try to make the PG film, especially if the end result is, we tried, we can't really tell if we were successful or not. It seems to me that it almost has to be something that's done.
It's almost like a documentary in and of itself about the film, which I think the definitive one hasn't been made yet. I think not just the film in and of itself, but the circumstances surrounding film, which I think we would all agree is a pretty fascinating story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really fascinating story. And if you coupled that with the actual scientific attempt to recreate it, I think you could have a really good, solid, I think there's 2 hours of material you could do. I mean, it would obviously be some rehashing of stuff you'd seen in specials, but it would be a pretty all-encompassing thing, not just scientifically, but also the human interest side of it and the motivation side of it and all that.
You know, I saw this thing, it was from the BBC, about the Gutenberg press, and I forget who was on it, some very famous British person. Paul, you know all the British people. Who's the guy I'm talking about was on this show? You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Anyway,
it
was something about the making of the Gutenberg press and
Ringo Starr?
It wasn't Ringo Starr. It was the other one.
Okay.
The other famous British guy. George Harrison's dead.
That's right.
Anyway, this is pointless. What I'm saying is they broke down Stephen Fry. That's it. Yes, Stephen Fry.
Stephen Hawking.
Isn't Google wonderful?
Google is. Stephen Fry, that's an odd-looking man right there. I'm just going to point that out. If we need someone for the suit, I would put Stephen Fry in the suit, because he's an interesting dude. In fact, we can get Stephen Fry to do this. What I'm trying to say is, they in the show, which I would recommend anyone with BitTorrent to find and watch, because it's very good, they broke down the recreation. Nobody really knows what the Gutenberg press looked like or how it was made, so he did all this research. And anyway, you could see a similar thing done with the Patterson film, like somebody just working on the feet, because obviously there has to be a foot component involved. Or, the suit itself. Then you could spend half the time talking about the people behind the scenes. It could be interesting. It could be really fun.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I don't think more than 200 people would watch it, but it would be interesting to some of us.
I think that it would it seems to me we've just kind of come out of a period in the last few years where the interest in Bigfoot has really probably peaked. I mean, you guys have probably for a while. I mean, this is a I think this is a, we would all agree, a genuine bona fide mystery. And we would all agree that we believe that it has an actual physical animal attached to it along with a truckload of BS. But I think we're kind of in a down cycle now. Bigfoot has kind of run through its cycle. And, you know, we've seen movies, we've seen ads, a lot of stuff, a lot of humor, blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of stopped. It seems to me, anyway. But I think it will come back because I don't see the mystery really going away. I think you'll still continue to have sightings, real or imagined, and some piece of evidence probably, God knows how long from now, will, you know, a tooth, bone fragment, good video or film. But until that time, I think it's kind of like the stock market in the 90s. Peak, and now we're in like, we're like early 2000.
This is too, okay. Yeah.
But and it's crashed.
So
go ahead.
There's a Bigfoot recession, is what you're saying.
Yeah, kind of. I think we are in a Bigfoot recession. Not a depression.
No.
But I don't think it'll ever reach depression until, personally, I believe until a specimen is found. I think it'll always kind of be there. But again, what will fan the flames will be something hopefully better than that alien video peering in the window in Nebraska or whatever the hell that was.
See, I couldn't find that video on the internet. I looked for it, and every time I tried to see it.
No, they were told not to record it.
And yes.
They're putting it into a documentary, and we'll all get to watch it in 6 months' time. But going back to the documentary, yeah, to the making of the definitive Bigfoot documentary, and Brian brought up this Gutenberg Press documentary. One of the interesting things about that, of course, is that was produced by the BBC, who take a different approach to program making, mm-hmm, to commercial TV companies.
Yes, exactly.
They don't sell advertising. There's, for those that aren't aware, the British Broadcasting Corporation don't have any adverts on any of their TV or radio stations. They're funded by a license fee, which I think is about £150 a year, so about $300. And for that, we get the BBC. So they don't have to sell advertising, which means they have a tendency to make programs that are that little bit more obscure, but certainly stuff that wouldn't get made by a commercial producer. Somebody brought up the example, I can't remember what it was, the example of Top Gear a while ago, which is a BBC show about cars.
It's a great show.
Now, it's a great show, but it's one that could never be made in America because you'd have too much pressure from Toyota or from Ford to show their cars and not drive Toyotas off cliffs and this sort of thing, to be able to make it in the same way.
Well, it wouldn't be pressure. There'd be opportunity from the producer to sell Toyota or whoever a spot on the show. But if the show in and of itself is not trying to make money, which I think is your point, it's a different kind of production at the end of the day. I mean, you don't have an opportunity to sell a 15-minute segment of Toyota, so you don't. And you do it instead on a Nissan or something like that.
Yeah, we get a lot of programs produced by the BBC that are watched by 15 people.
We
don't care. You know, the BBC obviously are interested in ratings, just like any of the other TV stations, but they've got a lot of flexibility. You know, they've got three or four other channels that really get ratings in the thousands, not the tens of thousands.
It's interesting. There's a thing there called the Audience Appreciation Index. Isn't that correct? Where they poll people to find out how they liked a show after it was on. You've never been polled. Well, you're off the grid or something. But that's also one of the things that they use to judge. Not necessarily how many people watched it, but of the people who did, how much they like it, and if it was a very high appreciation index, then that's a good thing. And anyway, I'm just backing you up, man.
Yeah. Okay.
Someone like that has to make the show. I think that's the point I was trying to make earlier. That's the point you're making is that it can't be the Discovery Channel. You know, I'd have nothing against the Discovery Channel, but if you're trying to sell something to a network like that, that has to sell commercial time and be watched, you know, 5,600 times, because that's how many times they're going to air it. It's going to be made differently. That's all there is to it.
Every day.
Yeah.
You know what it would take? It would almost take somebody who had quite a bit of clout let's say, in the industry or the scientific industry, not scientific industry, but the scientific establishment, who would be willing to co-produce, but a show like this, where and a stipulation, the stipulations have to be set out ahead of time that the hype is going to be at a minimum, and I think it is possible. I don't think, based on the schlock we've seen in the last couple of years as far as Bigfoot productions are concerned,
yeah,
probability is maybe low, but I think it's possible. It can happen. Somebody come in, yeah, look, I'm in control. I get final cut on this. I mean, almost someone like Spielberg or somebody comes in, approaches Discovery Channel. Let's say he has a genuine interest in Bigfoot. He goes, look, we're going to do strive to be a very objective, non-hypey, scientifically based thing on recreating the Patterson film. And I think they would do it in a heartbeat because Spielberg's name is attached to it. And it would get great ratings. But I think something like that is probably going to have to be the case, because it seems currently the internal people at Discovery and History have just gotten so hypey with this stuff that they it's almost like they don't care. It's just, well, whatever's dramatic. Whatever
it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter what's on the show or what it does, as long as people watch it. And, you know,
yeah,
they can
which
keep showing space.
Sucks. It's a horrible attitude.
That's our system. Yeah. You know, I've had, I don't remember if it's even maybe been here with you guys, but the you look at what's going on in TV right now, and there are a lot of shows being put on about, you know, weird and sort of fringe topics. There's Ghost Hunters on the Science Fiction Channel, which is an awesome program. Even if you don't think it's real, it's super entertaining. There's a similar show about UFO guys. The problem with this subject, I think, is that it's too hard to... You just can't walk into somebody's house and see Bigfoot. Like, if you're on the Ghost Hunters, you can almost walk into any place and say, oh, that could have been
and
a ghost.
Hear something.
Right,
and assume
right.
It might be a ghost and play scary music and
right,
people,
exactly.
Ooh, it might be.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I wonder what that was. But yeah. Bigfoot, you can't do that because you can go out in the woods. And...
Unless you're on a BFRO expedition.
I keep forgetting. Those guys, let's get those guys and take them to Sci-Fi, and I'm sure they'll make something.
Oh, I'm sure that's been thought of, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, should we move on to the next topic?
Sure.
We've run out of Patterson Gibnon film talk.
Yeah, that where there wasn't at the end talking about MK.
There's a comment on iTunes that says, good show, but too much PG film discussion.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up the entire field of Bigfoot right there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because it is the best, but wouldn't we all agree that in the history of Bigfoot, though, it is probably the single most interesting mystery within the general mystery?
Of course
of
it
Bigfoot.
Is. Of course
yeah.
It is. Which is why we talk about it. Which is why there's thousands and thousands of posts about it on the BFF and elsewhere.
Exactly.
Because it's and like we said in the first episode of this particular program, it's never been done again. Which is, regardless whether or not right. you believe it's true or a lie,
true.
it's never been done again. What's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that if you had jfkforums.com, and I'm sure there is one, that a lot of the conversation will be about the Zapruder film.
Exactly. Yeah, and he was in office for like 3 years, and all they would talk about is that, and maybe a little bit of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And donuts.
Possibly donuts. Okay.
The hell's...
No idea what that
ponder
means.
Ponder that little nugget there.
When I'm sure you've never heard this story. When Kennedy visited Berlin.
Is this like the donkeys killing more people in the UK than?
No, no. When Kennedy visited Berlin, I've no idea when
ich
it was.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
He did a speech and with the Ich bin ein Berliner,
right?
Which apparently is a glazed donut.
Yeah.
So what he said was, I'm a donut.
Did he get support from pastry unions in Eastern Europe after that?
Sugar.
Or...
Oh,
the,
he never.
The sugar union.
He never had to buy another baked product in his life. Let's send boxes to him.
Admittedly, was not that much longer. But anyway.
Yeah.
You know what happened the past week or so that I think is interesting, fascinating, one might say, is this tribe of people in the Amazon, this uncontacted tribe. Who
yes.
knows what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I saw these photos. And apart from the one guy wearing a SpongeBob SquarePants t-shirt, I thought it was a pretty interesting photo. Wait a minute. But there was something, I mean, I actually seriously don't doubt that. I think that those are legit, but there was just something about that story. It just seemed so like what the typical shot would be. Like,
yes,
there they are, the natives with the spears toward the sky. I do yeah. have a little bit of doubt about it. Like, maybe it's a misidentification of an already known tribe. I don't know, but it is a great story. If in fact it's true of these, apparently never photographed before.
No,
tribe.
Yeah, they've never seen them, never laid eyes on them before. It kind of creeps me out, these photographs, because, you know, some of them are like different colors, and they look like it's like a scene from, you know, Planet of the Apes or something.
Or Apocalypse Now or something.
Yeah. Ryan and I were talking about this earlier today, and we think these have been colorized by Ted Turner's TV company.
It could be. Give me a search term. I'm going to find this online.
The BBC has a lovely series of images. Who's got their cell phone on?
I do. Should I turn that off?
Yeah, throw it across the room.
Okay, I'm turning it off right now. Sorry about that, man.
Oh, there it is again. Here, yeah, I'll send you a URL, Scott.
All right, man. Sorry. This is so professional.
Yeah, you'll put it in the show notes as well, won't you?
Yes, I will put it in the show notes.
Sweet.
There, I just sent you a link.
I mean, I take it that whoever was flying this plane checked to make sure they weren't filming a series of Survivor out there.
Yeah, there's that guy. One guy is like totally red. He's a little Spider-Man action going on there. It looks like he's got a didgeridoo in his hand.
And then there's the black one in the middle there.
Yeah, so
it looks like fur to me. It looks like that figure is covered in black fur.
No, it's not fur, because you can see, actually, it looks like a female, like the breasts are there. But why? So I'm assuming that's some type of paint, because it's starkly different from the other brown-colored people. There's three other people. Looks like with spears. One guy's got a submachine gun, which doesn't really fit.
Only two of them appear to be normally colored. Two of them are red.
Yeah, the red guy, there's the black. I'm thinking a woman based on the breasts. And then the other two just kind of are like in hunter mode or whatever. They've got stuff in their hands.
Yeah.
The BBC page, which is the best I've seen of this, talks about two different dyes. The red dye being something called uricum, and it's commonly used by tribes in the Amazon. And it says it's made from the seeds of a fruit similar to the horse chestnut.
And is it a camouflage thing, or is this some kind of a ritualistic?
The article says that it's likely to be an aggressive display. Which, given that they're pointing bows and arrows at the plane,
I was going to say
that's a little weird.
I don't think I'd need a PhD in Amazon tribes to figure out that it's aggressive.
Here's why I don't understand that. Okay, so the helicopter's flying over, these tribal guys come out. So what, all of a sudden one rushes in and paints himself completely red to show an aggressive...
No, the plane went by 2 hours earlier.
I didn't know that part.
Couldn't find any, and then came back. So 2 hours earlier, they'd flown by and sort of buzzed them, you know, dropped some USAID food parcels on them.
Some lost DVDs.
And then flew back, and presumably by that time they'd had time to paint themselves.
That is so. Yeah, I got to tell you, those huts are pretty impressive. They're like, you know, there's a couple of A-frames. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're tall. Look, based on this one photo where you see four huts, and it looks like about, you can see it looks like about 12 people.
The height of that
one looks like it's about, you know, I would say maybe 18 feet. I mean, if you look at the size of the figures, it's
exactly
very, very large. Yeah.
One of the things that the article says is that it points out that the sides of those huts don't reach the ground, which suggests that it's likely to be a communal hut for eating or doing other stuff.
It's the body painting.
And not a hut. Absolutely. It's got a little art studio in there, some easels and a whole range of watercolors. And they've probably got Photoshop for all they know.
And, yeah.
And they've probably got other little huts somewhere for sleeping in.
Yeah. And then one has, it looks like the front end of a Volkswagen Bug sticking out of it. That's
weird.
Something I didn't expect. That is odd.
And they're all wearing little white belts, which I think is also interesting.
Oh, yeah. They get everywhere, those things.
Wasn't there a Bigfoot report about a Bigfoot with a UFO and the Bigfoot was wearing like belts? That's just suddenly like coming back into my head. And I'm just saying it was out there. I don't know why I'm talking about it. Never mind.
Was MK involved with any of those reports?
I don't believe so, but I might have to go back and check my sources. So okay. I guess the reason why I find this is interesting is, oh, look, there's these people. Nobody knew they were there. And I know that it's Brazil, and I know that the Amazon is very large. But is there anything that, if you're a Bigfoot person, can you like look at that and go, oh, see, we don't know everything. I mean, is there anything there that we can hang our hat on, or is it just, whatever?
Yeah. Well, I think it's an example. Just an example like, wow, yeah, that the world is bigger than most people like to think it is, as far as being able to hide stuff and that mass media doesn't see all the time. Or, I mean, I'm sure people who live near Brazil have seen these people. It's not right. like, but as far as being photographed, this is the first time this has probably happened. So I think it's good. I think it helps the argument.
So it's not unlike Bigfoot in that many people who live in areas where we believe they are have heard stories, have had some, encounters themselves.
Sure.
And it's only, quote unquote, the rest of us, the rest of the world, who haven't seen it yet. So it must be a joke. So I would love to go and find out if like the people who live nearest them, like they said, oh yeah, I saw this one red guy with a bow and arrow. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Have another drink.
Yeah. I mean, there's, other examples, Ishii. I mean, look at Ishii, that's super long ago. What was that? 80 years ago, 80, 90 years ago that this, old world Indian was living in, California, and so I think there's, I think it basically supports the argument for things like Bigfoot that, this is not just a tribe, but look, this is a village that had never been photographed in an open area. And I think it's safe to say, as far as with Sasquatch, if in fact they exist, is the fact we're not talking large groups of them, probably small little social units that are,
who don't
hanging
build structures.
In,
they're not building giant.
Who don't build structures, just use the land as such, which it seems conceptually would be even harder to get footage of. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's – and also I think you were going to talk about coming up, and it kind of ties in with this, is the rhino footage, which was – it was kind of cool that within about a week's time, all the – we had this rare rhino footage, and we had the isolated – tribe, and it's just a matter of time, friends.
Yes, well, since we're segueing into that now, the little Java rhinos, Mama Rhino eats a camera, a game camera.
Yeah, that was that's a cool shot. If nobody's seen that, if any listeners out there, go. I guess if you Googled on Java Rhino, you'll see it like smack right into the camera.
Or if you go to,
did it break the camera?
There's another BBC page here that I'll link to in the show notes at thebigfootshow.com, where you can see the footage itself. I believe the rhino like attacked. Yeah, I'm watching it right now. The rhino like attacks and destroys the camera.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad for it's probably a double-edged sword. Their camera got messed up, but they got that great footage of. Wait a minute. I'm looking for it now.
I'll send you the link.
I know.
It's on our notes.
Yeah, I'm scrolling now. Oh, I went to that back to the beginning
if,
of all.
If you find the BBC page, Stephen Hogg from the WWF, he says the assault on the camera still has us baffled, because we specifically used infrared lights as the source of illumination when we designed and built these units, so as not to scare animals away when the camera activates.
Interesting.
Now, obviously on Bigfoot forums, we've had a lot of conversations over the years about infrared. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with infrared is you always have this little red light. which animals just, you know, I tried it out on my dogs, and you know, they paid attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact, just, you know, it being infrared makes little difference to it. They're still going to know that there's something out of place there. It's not that they can see infrared. They can see the little red shine that we see. Whenever you look at an infrared security camera, I can see a red shine or light. And I suspect that a lot of animals see, you know, see the same sort of thing and think, oh, that's out of place. There's something not right about that.
There's also noise that electronics make that we're not going to hear, but because they're too high pitched, but that other animals might hear. That may also account for that. I think it's interesting if you see a lot of game cam shots of deers and things like that. A lot of time they're looking at the camera in the shot.
Mm, yes.
Well, how did they know about that? You know, I thought it was supposed to be invisible to them. Anyway, yeah, on the video, there's a couple of shots, and she gets closer and closer, and it's not until she gets right up on top of the thing that she sees it and takes it down.
I didn't read the full article. Did they bait this camera with something, any kind of scent? It's amazing how well framed they are. I mean, both are. One's, I'm watching it now. One goes off, and here comes. I think this might be the. They look like Star Wars characters. like in the bar scene, you know.
They're Jawas. That's what they are.
So now this guy's getting close. Yeah, I think you're right. I bet it's an auditory thing that they're just. What is that? Here he goes. He's getting.
This is top quality entertainment right here. Listening to us.
It is. Listening to us.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that is awesome. It just cold cocks that thing, man. That is.
So there's going to be a link to this on our website, so everyone can go out there.
I mean, I feel really bad for the cameraman.
Exactly.
They had a little guy holding that camera, and he just got knocked for six.
And imagine after a while how bad you'd have to go to the bathroom after that, too, just sitting there.
Yeah. It would have to be almost like a fidget cameraman.
Or you could use a paper cup, I guess.
You could, or whatever was laying around, sure. Which reminds me, we've all gone, right? Nobody has to... Okay, never mind.
I'm going as we speak.
I'd love to know more about this story. I'd love to know what sort of area it's in. I mean, the article talks about only 60 to 70 of these left in the wild, which is a shockingly low number. So for them to get a couple of them on camera is, you know, in the wild is fantastic. But I wonder what sort of area this is, whether it's in a game reserve or whether it really is in the wild. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we see in wildlife programs are not as wild as we think they are. There was a show broadcast a few years ago in the UK called Bears Spy in the Woods. I don't know whether it was broadcast in the States or not, but they used a completely unique way, a new way of filming these, where they hid the cameras within all sorts of devices. And the one that I thought was fascinating was a mobile video camera that was completely encased in mirrors. So what happened was, when it's put on the forest floor, it looks like foliage because it's reflecting the foliage that's around it. And it just disappeared. You know, it really was like it was invisible.
It's like the
Predator.
And
they got some fantastic...
Just like what?
Yeah.
The Predator.
Oh yeah,
you know that kind of that mirror where it reflected everything kind of around him. And,
yeah, I bet that's where they got the idea.
Could be.
And but the thing about this documentary is one of the fascinating things about it. They had some fantastic footage of North American bears, but they were the first people ever to get footage of the giant panda in the wild.
Really?
This was only 3 or 4 years ago. We've all seen loads of footage of giant pandas, but apparently nobody had ever filmed it in the wild before. I wonder just how much wildlife footage is filmed in the park, you know, in the picnic area at the back of a zoo.
I think most of it's probably pretty legit because you'd have to. I don't know. I would think. I'm sure there's been attempts and whatnot. I think when it comes as far as as far as Bigfoot is concerned, with remote camera work, is not only that there hasn't even really been any very interesting possibles on like cam trackers yet, but that apparently there hasn't even been any attempts at any like good fakes either. If you, I think we talked about this briefly before, that you would think with the knowledge of cam trackers, video and still imagery over the last, what has it been? It's been a good 5-6 years now.
Yeah.
That it's really been talked about, that it hasn't even really been that many. I mean, one of the most talked about one was the squirrel shot in one of the TV shows or whatever. But mm-hmm. It doesn't even seem like the hoaxers are even trying to do that, with the possible exception of Biscardi and that weird shot from Arizona, which is actually really cool looking.
Yeah, that's like we talked about that one. It's creepy.
Yeah, because it's Biscardi, I don't even, you know, right. I mean, 1% shot that it's legit. So.
Right. Well, I don't know which the... This, God, come on, have another drink. this also nicely ties into this other topic that Bushnell came out with just this past week. They make trail cams.
Right.
Offering $1 million reward for a Bigfoot trail cam photo.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say that money will never be collected.
Well, here's what I was thinking. Go ahead, yeah. you go, then I'll go.
Well, the reason is, I mean, they're totally safe. They're getting all this free advertising, and they say the first verifiable shot. Well, you can't verify a still shot that it's a Bigfoot because they're too close to us physically, that it could always be a guy in a costume or it was somehow digitally altered. So it's really kind of a bullshit claim in my opinion.
Yeah.
They're not going to look at – you really think they're going to – okay, let's say an actual Sasquatch walks in front. I don't care how big it is. There's still – you could still say that this was altered in some way because it's a still shot. Which would be easier to fake. So it's kind of fun, but it's also somewhat disingenuous.
Well, some of these things shoot video, but the point is then you've just got the Patterson film taken from a trail cam. I mean, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this reward is not unlike the reward from the museum at Willow Creek.
Reproduce,
what is it, $100,000 to reproduce footprints. If you ever read into the sort of rules of that reward is that you've got to be able to convince a panel of hand-picked hominid experts who are obviously picked by the people who are going to lose the money.
Yeah, a.k.a. John Green. Let's be completely honest about this.
If you don't satisfy John Green, then you don't get your money.
Well, you know what's funny about that is that the one stipulation in particular, which is the making prints on the side of a hill. Now, you know, that where you see definition of the foot and it's big and it's going up a hill. Well, I asked John about that once and he actually said, oh, I never saw any of those myself, but I heard from a guy that he saw them. You know, that's just an example of totally uncorroborated condition that he then applies to the 100,000. Something that's never been, it's not even with a photograph. One guy told him he saw prints on the side of a hill, and suddenly that's part of it. It's BS. It's a stunt. It's, you know, and again, I don't know how conscious or unconscious this is on John Green's part, but it's kind of sad. I just think.
Are you suggesting that this Bushnell thing is a stunt?
I think it's partially a stunt.
Oh, it's a total stunt. But yeah. but they can't lose, right? They can't lose. I mean, they're going to get
What are the conditions that would have to be met that it would be a verifiable Bigfoot? Well, the only thing I can think seriously is a Sasquatch walks in one of these cameras, gets his picture taken, dies of a heart attack, and there's the body. So you have the body, and then you can corroborate it going, that is the picture of this. Here's your $1 million.
Stranger things have happened. But here's all this is coming soon. All this is all coming from a little tiny ad on a little spot on their site, and it says coming soon. So there's no details behind this yet.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be pretty sure that when the time comes, part of the terms of this thing are going to be that they own the photo. If you submit it and they give you the $1 million, it's their photo. They're going to make $1 million off that photo, right? They're going to sell, and even before then, they're going to sell tons of these cameras to you know, armchair. Well, not. I guess you couldn't be an armchair researcher. You really aren't going to win if you are an armchair researcher. But people who are going out there, they're going to buy a lot of cameras, and they're going to stick them out there, and so there's no way for them to lose on this thing.
And it could be, ironically enough, it turns out a Bushnell employee ends up getting a shot of an alleged Sasquatch.
Oh, then they're off the hook.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of fun. I mean, it's fun, but it's just, you know, the chances of someone actually collecting is not because there aren't big feet, but just by the nature of the medium being used. I mean, yeah, you could always argue, well, it's a great, you know, even if it's 9-10 feet tall. Well, that could be a guy, so we can't verify that it's actually a Bigfoot. And now, hey, do any of these...
Scott, there's not many guys that are 9 and 10 feet tall.
That's true, but it's still, if it's a still shot, it could still be some type of costume where a guy's wearing an outfit, he's got an extension up, you know, on top or whatever. Because if it's still, you can't get any movement definition, you know, that type of thing. But, I had some really important point that just currently evades me, so I'll shut up. I remembered. I'm sorry. I had a question for you guys. Do any of these units, these remote units, have audio capability on them?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
See, that I think would be good, because if you happen to get a Bigfoot on camera, on video, screaming, I mean, it's still, that can still be altered, but it would add, if it was an actual Bigfoot, would add another layer of
a Bigfoot on camera saying, "I'm a real Bigfoot."
Exactly.
That would be good too.
Right, maybe with a top hat, tails,
but
playing
a
saxophone.
If he said it in like an American Indian dialect, you're done. You're done. Sign here, and you got your check.
Yeah.
No, in my admittedly limited experience with these things, which has mostly been following other people around who are using them, and I've seen the video that comes off of them. I don't recall it having audio, so I don't believe there's audio involved. No. But I could be wrong.
I've never heard of a trail cam video with audio, but it wouldn't take much.
Yeah.
No, I mean...
It would surprise me in many ways if none of these video cameras had, if they didn't have audio. It wouldn't take much to add that to the camera.
Right.
Hmm. I'm going to call these Bushnell guys. I'm going to tell them.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good... Yeah.
Wow.
Do you reckon they've got a little department somewhere that has Bigfoot on the door? Just the Bigfoot department.
With one guy who sits in there. Hi! Hi, yeah?
One guy. And he's waiting for the phone to ring.
He is.
Somebody claiming their $1 million.
Poor guy.
Let me ask you guys this. What do you think? We'll get your personal opinions on the odds that you think somebody somewhere in North America, an owner of one of these remote cameras, actually has a picture of an actual Sasquatch on one of those things. What would you put the odds at?
We talked about this on this show, I think, but I spent some time with the TBRC guys down in Texas who have an ongoing project with this. Just there in that small region in which they're doing their research with these cameras, the odds are slim. And they're trying with multiple cameras. I would say the odds are low that someone has one, just because in general the odds of capturing this type of an animal on a camera have got to be just vanishingly small. So I'm going to say pretty low.
Yeah. I think... Oh, go ahead, Paul.
But you're talking about people that are actively looking for this.
I am,
right. There must be hundreds of thousands of these cameras strapped to trees across the country.
Yeah.
With people that are looking for deer and want to see what sort of activities in the area. Now, if your average Joe Schmo hunter gets one of these pictures on his camera, if he's never discussed Bigfoot before, he's never encountered it, never really thought about it, it wouldn't surprise me if one of them, didn't sort of think to themselves, my God, what do I do with this? I'm not showing this to anybody.
Exactly. I think that is not that improbable at all. Because I think you got a lot of, I mean, there's so many reasons, much like why I don't think one has been shot. I think when you really analyze it, your average person probably has more reasons not to make this public than to make it public. Oh, it's a still photo. They would think I'm faking it. I don't want these things hurt. I'm not sure what this is. They just don't give a damn, whatever. it really wouldn't super surprise me if there was an actual shot of a Sasquatch on a game cam somewhere. I'd put it at, I give it a 32% chance of probability. That's my current
32%
chance. Right. Man, well, 34.
Okay, I'm writing this down. So 34 right. is what you're going with.
No, and by the way, my current opinion probability that the Patterson film is fake is 87.89, that it's fake.
That was, we need to get a tracker. We need to get some kind of little widget, a little widget for the computer that tracks this so we can map it over time. Along
yeah.
with like the barometric pressure. There might be a correlation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I sent you guys a link on the Cryptomundo story that brought this prize to my attention that Bushnell has. There's an image on there of some strange brown hairy thing, which is completely impossible to see. But anyway, that's if there's a picture, I'm guessing it's going to be like that one. And this will also be in the show notes. But some sort of like blurry, for people who remember this sorts of thing, this is the Diana Martin photo from 2006, I believe. So it'll be brown fuzzy. I mean, standing there like full frame, you know, feet to the top of his head. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's,
well, you know, Brian, kind of extending what you were saying a little earlier about the chances of someone getting a shot of these. I mean, just look in that one photo, and if you look to the right in that photo, it gives a good indication, I think, of that. I would say that's pretty good, you know, Pacific Northwest average forest. Now look at all those possible avenues of movement any animal could go through. I mean, we there's game trails, granted, but it's an assumption that a Sasquatch would use game trails. But just look off there and you see how many trees do we just see in that sliver? There's like probably 30 trees. Which of those do you strap a camera to? You know,
right.
Which, you know, there's so many avenues of transportation that a primate could take out there that the odds, you know, are fairly remote. Any one particular camera is going to catch something. But again, more cameras out there, it increases the chances, but how much does it? So I think I just completely contradicted my point I was trying to make a few minutes ago.
Yeah, you did, but that's okay. Yeah. That's all right.
Yeah, it's all part of the grand mystery of Bigfoot.
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
have you guys heard anything I've said in the last few minutes?
No.
No, have you been talking?
Oh, Paul.
No, I've just realized the mute button's on.
This is why we've been ignoring you.
Yeah. No, I've just realized that there's a mute button, and I just bashed it against the desk. Anyway, what I was saying was...
and it was the most interesting show. Part of this show.
Right it's there. Gone. It's
great
gone.
Show up until that point. Paul discovered he had a mute button. the thing is, you're probably statistically more likely to find the Bigfoot first and then strap the camera to a nearby tree than to just shove it on any tree and wait for a Bigfoot to walk past.
Yeah.
This is the basic problem with using game cams, which is that the forest is very large, you know, and that you would need all of them, all of the game cams to cover even a reasonably sized forest. What they're doing in Texas is the Big Thicket National Preserve, which is an amazingly dense, just unbelievable primordial environment, just beautiful, scarily rugged. But even there, they've got something like 12 or 13 cameras. I forget the exact number right now. And
you would need that's why I think, I mean, I think the best way of something like this would be, you know, you pick a zone that's apparently has an historically rich history of sightings, hopefully some recent sightings that seem credible, and then an in-depth, almost, I think you would almost, you know, bring in primate experts, people who've worked with gorillas, and you sit around with these topo maps and just start, you know, literally trying to get into the mind.
Yes.
If you were to ask, where the hell would I go?
Right.
What would be the easiest? Where are the water sources? And based on that other, you know, maybe orangutan histories and mountain gorillas, with these, and again, I think at least a couple hundred of these cameras you would need, and preferably some type of private property where you wouldn't have people traipsing back in there. That to me seems like a way to increase the probability of actually getting one on camera.
I think the using the land and the structure of the area is will be key if this is successful, yeah. Because I think that at least in some of the cases that I've seen, just putting them out there in a random kind of way, following game trails, may not be enough. I mean, there are things that we suspect about these animals and their use of waterways, for example.
Right.
So I think it makes a lot of sense to take what you think you know and to try to cover the likely pathways, as opposed to just sticking them on a random trail somewhere and hoping that one of them will just blunder by on his way to the 7-Eleven. I think that's
less. And how cool would it be to have a like some kind of minivan control center where you had a large screen where it was all divided up into these grids of the actual cameras. So when you had some kind of initial trip, within a short time, maybe hopefully within a few seconds, you could see what it was seeing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, utilizing something like you had a van and then some type of almost like some kind of small helium balloon that you could use as a relay. That is high enough in the area. I know, I've thought about this, man. I want to do this through the mouth of Klamath, but it's snapping at me. How cool that, you know, have a small, good team of people and just sit that you just sit there and watch this thing for like a couple days. And I mean, it would be, I mean, whether or not a Bigfoot passed in front would be cool, but, you know, what else would you see, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, again, going back to my friends in Texas, I mean, they'll take a black bear. Black bears aren't supposed to be there either. So a black bear would be terrific for them to get a picture of.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
A pileated woodpecker. Those aren't supposed to be down there either. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be Bigfoot to be interesting.
Just think of the amount of noxious gas that would build up in the van. That would just – that would be awesome.
You know, this is all a problem with technology, which if you would – you know, to your point, if you'd gone back 5 years ago, there's now game cams that will call your cell phone and email you the photo that it takes. Of course, you need cell phone coverage for that, and in many places where these things are happening, there's no coverage. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, 5-10 years before you can put out a network of cams and be able to monitor them in real time. I think that would be tremendously interesting.
And that and coupled with that would be the, you know, it's finding that right number of people that if you were out on an expedition whereby, you know, you get a hit on camera 32 and shit, it's upright, it looks like an ape, whatever, you know, and you get it shortly, and then some type of plan to do some type of like tiger circle thing, you know, where you get people surrounding that area and then close the circle in. But still, that's still a lot of area.
And where are you going to get all the tigers for that? I mean, that just doesn't seem realistic.
No, it actually, that's they use them on tigers in India.
Oh,
Yeah.
I thought you actually meant tigers.
Yeah, Go Simbu.
That didn't seem realistic.
Taking a toy monkey, putting it underneath its nose. Go. Find the great Sasquatch.
Or, you know, the... What if we're thinking about this the wrong way, putting the camera and waiting for the Bigfoot or whatever it is to walk by? What if you did something that would bring them to the cameras and then put the cameras in a certain density surrounding this? And I don't know what it would be, whether it would be...
Could be periodic purported squatch cries. You could, you know, attach, let's say, above the camera on the tree up a little bit where it could, little mini to the speaker, you know, some whatever.
What was that? How was that?
That's Bigfoot stubbing its second toe.
It hurts. the plan Brian and I came up with years ago was to build a sort of trap with a load of gibbons or something.
In
the middle of the forest.
Hard to get gibbons.
Well, that's where the plan fell down.
It did. That and the tigers. We couldn't get the tigers and the gibbons.
We did consider orangutans for a while, but, you know.
I tried that with Yule Gibbons once, but he didn't.
but we figured, why not give these Bigfoot something ape-like that they've never seen before?
Well, it gets back to that whole, like, are they curious? So even if it isn't, you know, I think, Paul, when we were talking about that on our long drive in California, if I remember correctly, is when this happened. It could be the sound of an infant crying. It could be all kinds of things. But something that would, like, oh, what the hell? And if you were a regular animal, you'd run away from it. But if you were you know, a semi-intelligent proto-primate kind of deal, you might want to go, like, what the hell's that? And try to get closer to it and see it. And then you might trick them into coming into a range or into a net of cameras, a tiger circle, if you will, of cameras.
How about this? You're in the van. You get a hit on camera 48. It's okay. That looks like a friggin' Bigfoot. You immediately get in a small biplane with about 10 chimps strapped in with parachutes, mini cameras affixed to the top of their heads, and then you push them out of the plane, parachute them into this area. So now you have 10 chimps with cameras on the tops of their heads in an area where you're reasonably sure there is a Bigfoot within, let's say, a square mile radius. Now that... that's plausible.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, that is not only scientific, but certainly going to be amusing, I think.
Just to see what they do.
Just a shot of a chimp going out of a plane in a parachute with a camera epoxied to the top of his head.
And the chimp should have laser beams strapped to their heads as well, shouldn't they?
Exactly. So it's something to incapacitate.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've got 10. I would bet, like, could 10 chimps take a Sasquatch down? It's a good question, but even if, like, all 10 of them weren't there, he has to have some way to sort of stun the Sasquatch.
I had someone...
We could train the chimps to ride the tigers.
Oh,
that would be good.
Nice.
Yeah, that would bring all the Sasquatch out, just turning their heads like, you know, when you make a high-pitched noise to a dog. It's just they'd be looking, and that's when you drop the half-mile square net from the sky just over the area.
Yeah.
It's all not going to work.
Oh, we've got this. So this is
also all we need is 10 chimps trained to ride tigers, and of course, 10 tigers
and
parachutes.
Right, you could probably parachute the tigers and the chimps together if you epoxy those two together out of the plane, so they land and they hit the ground moving.
Yeah, right, of course, I don't see how this could lose.
Yeah, of course, if this human rights case in Europe goes through, then the chimpanzees will be human. We won't be able to throw them out of planes.
Damn it.
Well, we're not doing it in Europe, so who cares? There's no
Bigfoot
in Europe. Yeah, but
if they're regarded as human in Europe, you see, you won't be able to use them in America either.
Yeah, whatever.
I wonder what a Bigfoot would do, I mean, when encountering a chimp. When other higher primates of different species have encountered each other, in zoo confines, you know, or if there's actually been experimentation with that.
I think he would run like hell. That's what I think he would do.
Yeah.
If he doesn't know what it is and he doesn't know that he can kill it and eat it, I think he's going to run like crazy. That's my gut.
What if the very last... What if, since we've been talking about this, you know, because I am, as you know, convinced that I was within 40 feet of one of these things.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's been talked about ad nauseam. So I do believe, based on that and just the sheer volume of sightings over the years, yes. But I mean, what if, as we're speaking right now, the last Sasquatch just died? It's just due to natural selection.
Boredom,
chimp tiger combo knifing. That would be such a. I wonder if that's actually. Has there been something similar to that in the history of science whereby you had an animal that you'd heard stories about and there were people looking for it, but they later in time deduced that it had actually gone extinct and they found the bones of it, fossilized or otherwise, later, years later? Has there ever been a case like that where there was active searching, probably went extinct, but then they did find evidence later?
I have no clue.
Yeah. That's a good question, though, don't you think? I think that's an interesting, you know, possibility. It seems like the vast majority of the time, if there's all this anecdotal evidence, usually one is found. You know, we finally get the picture of the squid. We knew squids exist, but we got the picture of the squid, and they get the guy with a copy. One of those gets found. A panda gets found. Mountain gorillas got found. Mm-hmm.
I think this goes back to the problem with carcasses in the wild, is that they don't get found.
Yeah, it is rare. I think it's definitely rare. Coupled, not only the vastness, but the fact that when a large mammal knows it's going to die, they tend to go to hidden places. They're not going to lie out in the middle of the field because they're so vulnerable at that point. They want to go someplace where, almost like a cave or something, where they feel a little safe.
Well, how often are the carcasses of great apes and chimps found?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because, I mean, very dense, lush environment, you know, not the same as the Pacific Northwest, but similar.
Yeah.
How often do you find a dead chimp just laying there?
I don't know.
I suspect you probably don't if it's died of natural causes.
Yeah. We do know. I mean, we do know that. I mean, we're reasonably sure, unless George Schaller's a complete liar, which I don't have any reason to believe he is, because there's no photographic evidence. But what, in the '60s, he actually witnessed a mountain gorilla covering a dead mountain gorilla with vegetation. So it has apparently been witnessed that a higher primate has, in a sense, not buried, but at least tried to hide the body of a loved one.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's an argument I use a lot with people when they say, well, why is it? Well, you know, we know, seemingly we know that, you know, a mountain gorilla has been seen doing this, so it wouldn't be too – and we know Neanderthals buried their dead. Mm-hmm. So if we are talking about something that might be a proto-human or at the very least something similar to a mountain gorilla, you know, that could be explained or partially explain maybe why we haven't gotten any remains yet.
Yeah, it could be they're cremating them too. In which case, we're screwed.
Yeah, that's eating the. Maybe they got those powerful jaws. Maybe they just eat their dead. And
they
it's actually
eat
that
they're dead.
but wouldn't it now? See, this leads to, I think, at least in my own feeble mind, an interesting question. Has it ever been witnessed in any other species? Especially in mammals or perhaps primates, where they do eat their dead, and the reason is, or they feel the reason is, so that as a hiding mechanism, in other words, as something, well, gosh, if we leave poor Joe here dead, that's going to endanger us because one of our potential enemies might find it. So damn it, let's barbecue him up.
That's interesting. I know that there's cannibalism due to, you know, ritual and that sort of thing. I've never heard of anybody to like trying to hide the body eating it. That's interesting.
Yeah, maybe that's if that's been documented in the history of science.
Oh, we're done. We're done. If that's been documented, we're finished.
No, doesn't mean they do, but I mean that that makes sense. I would think a species would learn that. Oh God, if we leave, you know, whatever it is, if, you know, Joe Blow's lying there, we might as well just eat him.
Might as well eat Joe.
We don't have a shovel. Let's eat him.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that's been observed in the past is that that mammals will sometimes eat their young if they've died. You know, wild dogs will eat their puppies, and it's suspected that it's to ward off predators, not to attract attention from predators.
Oh, sure. If it's sitting there and dead and rotting, you're gonna attract attention, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't think they eat themselves. I mean, they're huge. It's one thing to say that a dog eats its puppy. That's one thing. But like a Sasquatch eating another Sasquatch, it's like a cow eating a cow. I mean, they're gigantic.
Well, maybe there's only certain parts they eat, you know, and then they make coats out of the fur. See, so if you ever see a Sasquatch with a fur coat, it's probably his brother.
And musical instruments out of the ribcage, little like
like xylophones. That would be some good footage. Playing a ribcage xylophone. There's the chimp and the tiger dancing behind him.
And we wonder why nobody takes us seriously.
No, I wonder why it doesn't. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, we were talking about photographs on webcams.
Yes, we were.
Game cams. That's what the discussion was about. I don't know. I still don't think we'll see a good quality photo. And part of the reason for this is, of course, these game cams are typically designed to take photographs of relatively small animals, deers and...
Yeah, the height.
Not 8 foot tall. There aren't many 8 foot tall deer.
Mm,
and if they were, then we wouldn't get them all in frame.
Yeah.
Well, I think that that's, you know, what I was saying earlier, you're probably not going to get a full-framed image of a Sasquatch. You're going to see either its midsection because you were looking for a deer and you mounted it at that height, or you're going to see, you know, you'll mount it higher and you'll get down to its waist. I think it would be improbable, knowing the environments that these things supposedly live in, it would be hard to get a full-frame shot of one. I mean, not impossible, sure, but I think...
Yeah. Which is why what you're likely to see is the something like the Diana Martin photo.
Exactly. Some sort of, like, furry, blurry, yeah, like, something walked by. You know, and again, there's more and more of these cameras have the they take a video along with the picture. So that might help. That would help a lot, because then yep, you could see it walking, and you could do all of the analysis you've done with the PG film, and it still wouldn't make any difference, but you could. But that would be better than just any sort of... Because it could be a squirrel, it could be a bear, it could be, you know, all kinds of things.
That would be very cool to see some cam tracker video footage that... You
like,
know, and then...
Like Biscardi's, right?
Yeah. Well, that actually was really cool, but again, it's Biscardi's.
It's very cool, and it's creepy and weird, and but it's Biscardi's, so you have to completely discount it.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. Hey, do you know anybody who's seen his movie that's out, Bigfoot Lives? It's actually has got a lot of good reviews, which I'm surmising friends of Biscardi have placed.
I've seen pieces of it, I think. I think I saw part of it. It was entertaining. If I didn't know anything about all this stuff, I would watch it. It was entertaining. He's a showman, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very entertaining.
A bullshit artist is what he is. Yeah. Or, I said it. I just said it.
Showman.
That's right.
Some people might call that showman. Yeah, it's not unentertaining, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think I don't think Patterson was to this degree. I mean, I do believe the Patterson film was hoaxed, obviously, or probably hoaxed, but...
87 point whatever it was.
Yeah, it's actually gone up a percentage.
Wow,
a little
just
bit.
Sitting here.
Yeah, I know, yeah. The okay. Biscardi gets me riled. I think Biscardi actually does genuinely believe these things do exist, but I also think his track record is so shady. I mean, unbelievably, it's not even shady, it's just dark. The amount of things that he claims to have seen, and it's ridiculously obvious he's a huckster. It's just, he is. Can I get sued for saying that? No, he'd have to prove that it was false, and that would be really hard.
I don't know if you can or not. Let's find out.
Well, I
did. Say it again.
No, it's already on there. That's just my opinion. I think that, yeah. So, whatever. Okay. Suddenly I'm getting a call from Biscardi's lawyer.
No. Yeah. And Brian just wants to point out that the opinions made by Scott are nothing to do with
not.
The show.
And it is just my opinion. It could be just a wild coincidence that he had one stuck in a cage and then it got out. And,
it does say this on the website, on thebigfootshow.com, that the opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the people who uttered them.
It's true.
Does it?
It does, at the bottom of the page. You can also go to thebigfootshow.blogspot.com. Same thing.
Sweet.
You didn't tell me.
I didn't tell you?
You didn't tell me this about this caveat. I thought whatever I said, you know...
That you were safe?
That I was perfectly safe and that you'd take the blame for everything.
Yeah. No.
Yeah? The opinions expressed on the show or something. Oh, well.
There you go. Oh, you know, we've got a whole new logo here for the show since the last time we were on.
Yes. Where is it?
We've had this
logo that we've had for about 3.5 months.
But we haven't had a show, so
we haven't been able to
talk about it. Seriously.
Do you not remember? We had that fantastic show where we discussed everything in really good scientific depth, you know, incredible detail. You just forgot to record it.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
That happened 2 or 3 times.
So this is show 6.
Well, if you number them that way, true. But the if you number them the ones that other people have heard, then this is number 5, and in between 4 and 5, we got this great new logo.
You really think people listen to this?
No, I don't think anybody does.
Hey, how is the hit count on these shows, man? Are people actually downloading them?
I haven't looked in a while. Hold on a second, and I will tell
you. Here we go. We're going to find out. Turns out it's like 120, and it's all three of us 40 times.
Testing it over and over again.
Yeah.
The first one has been downloaded over 700 times.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's How about the second one?
Second one? Well, it hasn't been out as long. But yeah. That dropped down to about 600.
That's not bad.
The third one... Oh, wait. That was not right. About 500. I don't know. This is kind of... I have to add up all these numbers. You know, this is... We're not going to make $1 million off of this Bigfoot crap. That's for sure.
Not without a photo and a Bushnell.
Yes. Well, if we had yes. Yeah. Then we'd be good. Paul,
I don't know if you could
wear the suit, Paul.
Here's some...
I could, but, you know, I've got this limp and...
That makes it more believable. It'll be like the Bossberg print, you know. We'll give you a limp and anyway. You were going to say something, Scott.
Yeah, I was going to say this is we're actually recording this on June 1st, and here's some indirectly related Bigfoot news hot off the press that the King Kong exhibit at Universal Studios burnt to the ground today.
It's a big fire at Universal Studios right now.
Yeah. The town square from Back to the Future was destroyed.
It's a big
deal. Again, yet another indicator that Bigfoot, large, you know, bipedal creatures. He wasn't really bipedal, was he? He was quadrupedal. He would stand up and beat his chest. But anyway, just another sign that we're in a Bigfoot recession.
It is. It's a Bigfoot recession, as we said earlier.
Well, you say that, but of course, Bigfoot's never been more popular in American culture. We talked about this last time. You only have to look at the number of people posting videos on YouTube to see how.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would say generally, like in a general sense, in the last 5 years, it's almost exploded. But I think in the last, just in the microcosm, if you will, of the last few months, I think it's dropped off
it's
big
ebbed.
Time.
Yeah. I think it was more popular in the 70s than it is now.
Mm. I don't know. Oh, go ahead.
Well, popularity is a strange thing. I was reading Daniel Perez's newsletter, Bigfoot Times.
Yeah.
Which came through the door the other day. And it was talking about the popularity of the Ohio conference, so getting 400 odd, and making a comparison between that and the Willow Creek conference, which didn't get anywhere near as many, despite having professional promotion and whatever.
The most recent Willow Creek conference?
The 2003 conference.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which I suspect had about 250, 300. People. But there was a big difference between the two, is that whilst the internet's been around in people's homes since mid to late 90s, the popularity of discussing it on the internet has gone up and up. In 2003, BFF was a year old, and I think we had, about 1,000 users. I don't know how many we've got now. There are more people, and so it's easier to spread the word of these conferences. People on the internet discussing Bigfoot are friendlier, by and large, with each other, and are more likely to make the trip now to a conference just to meet up with people. Well, that's what we did in Texas last year.
And Ohio and Texas. Texas had a whole lot of people at it, but it's just, you know, geographically
better
spot.
So I suspect that in many ways the popularity is of the subject as a whole might be more popular now simply because of the internet and people that really were on the fringe, weren't that interested in it before, but are interested in it now because they've got access to a lot of material, versus the 70s when we had the $6 million man and one book. I can remember talking about it at school, and bear in mind we're thousands of miles away. We talked about it in the 70s. I hadn't had a discussion with another person since the 70s and really until the Harry and the Hendersons movie came out.
Yeah.
And I wonder what would happen if we had a Harry and the Hendersons movie now. We've got lots of Bigfoot movies, but nothing of the popularity and production values that Harry and the Hendersons had.
Hey, Paul and Brian, I just forgot to mention something to you. I had this happened to me a few days ago, and it's definitely ties into Bigfoot. I'm currently hiking. I'm resting because I tweaked my ankle, but I'm hiking 60% of the Pacific Crest Trail this year,
Jesus.
About 1,600 miles, and I've already done about 300 And
you know there's a bus route, don't you?
Yeah, there are, but that's not as fun. And I can't, you know, I may not be able to run into a Sasquatch.
Should try riding a tiger.
But with a chimp on my head. There's this very nice couple called the Softleys who are called Trail Angels, and they let hikers stay at their house. This is in Agua Dulce in the desert, about 450 miles into the trail. So I go to visit them because all the hikers kind of congregate after a month on trail. And they were talking to this gentleman, and I heard her go, "Oh, he makes movies." And so they introduced me. This is our friend Lance. It was Lance Hendrickson. Lance Hendrickson. I said, "My God, the man who's been in more Bigfoot movies than any." And he said that's three. Awesome. I thought there were more, but he said, "Yeah, I've been in three of them."
It's three and narrating World's Greatest Hoaxes.
Was he in World's Greatest Hoaxes?
He was the narrator for World's Greatest Hoaxes.
Interesting. But he was a real nice guy for any Lance Hendrickson.
It's apparently in some Hollywood contract you're not allowed to actually do a Bigfoot movie without him.
Yeah, I think, and I think it's safe to say Lance maybe was in the worst Bigfoot film. What's the one? The one with the plane crash. Is it just called Sasquatch? Yeah, the one it's got the canines and that I think is arguably of the last 20 years the worst Bigfoot film.
Oh, I've never seen that.
He was quoted as saying that he got involved in that because it was so interesting and that it was a true story.
Oh wow. Well, it still was a shitty movie.
Was it worse than Legend of Boggy Creek 2?
Didn't see that. Was that the one with Dawn Marianne Wells?
Yes. That one's pretty bad, though. That's a pretty bad movie.
Yeah, I think I saw snippets of that one. It's really bad. I mean, Sasquatch is really a bad movie. If you look at even on Amazon, I think it gets 1.5, 2 stars. Usually,
By those people.
I know.
Exactly. The internet doesn't like it. It must be bad. Before we run out of time here, you said, Paul, that you have the new issue of Bigfoot Times. On our last show back in 1998, we talked about some images that Daniel had put. So what of those images? What's the deal?
A very good question. I thought there was another issue of Bigfoot Times in between because I don't remember reading much about it. I do.
What's the month of the one you have that you?
Yeah, it was March. I've been checking that out, by the way, the last few minutes as we've been talking, and I don't think there's been any follow up on it. He said there was going to be follow up, and there is no.
In the March issue, March issue was mailed. He says it was mailed on May 26th, so that can't be the March issue. Anyway.
Yeah, the issue that turned up on the doorstep was the one that was mailed out May 26th.
That's...
Do you know, I have a feeling that it was an article about a man-made foot, but I'm not going to say that with you recording.
Too late.
I have a feeling that he did exactly what we thought he was going to do. But I'd have to check. I don't have it with me. I have no idea where it's gone. I can't believe somebody else in the office has taken it away to read it.
I can't believe there's somebody else in the office with you.
No, there's nobody else in the office today. It's Sunday. It's Sunday night. I don't know where I put it. But I think it was an article about a man-made foot.
Well, go find it, because in a couple of months we're going to do another one of these shows and we'll want to talk about that.
Yeah,
a couple of months. We're gonna have to speed them up a bit. We should be doing them twice a week like everybody else is.
Well, I there was a small window of opportunity we had like a month ago, and it passed us by.
Yeah.
So anyway, it is my fault, but it's not my fault either.
It's always your fault.
So I wanted to mention our new art. I said something about our new art. That's a friend of the show named Daniel, who actually works for he works at the Weta Workshop down there in New Zealand. The Weta Workshop. Weta is the place that did all the special effects for Lord of the Rings movies and the Chronicle of Narnia movies and stuff like that.
Didn't it do King Kong as well?
It did the latest King Kong as well. That's right, exactly. So he's an illustrator down there, an artist, and he did that for us because he likes the show. So we thank him for that. It's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. That is a cool logo.
I don't have anything else in the notes to talk about. Did anybody else have anything else they wanted to say before we sign off here?
We were going to talk about whether recording sightings was worthwhile, but I think we'll leave that till next time.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, we should save that one, since this has already been...
That was going to be the first topic today, but...
Yeah, well, you should have reminded me. You should have said, no.
No. Well, we could always go on for another hour or two, but I think this is probably enough for just about everybody.
An hour and a half is a really long show.
There's one thing that I did want to mention, and that was, if you look in the iTunes reviews, there's a chap there called Mike O'Brien who suggests that we did a show asking why we find Bigfoot so interesting, or why people find Bigfoot so interesting. Mm-hmm. And why the subject has developed a life of its own, even among people who never venture away from their keyboards. I think we should leave that till next time. But
yeah, that is a good topic.
It's an interesting topic.
I could go on and on. I mean, I tried to do a show for the Bibcast once, that question right there, why do people find this interesting, is almost more interesting than the subject itself, because it does sort of generate an awful lot of bizarre weather all by it. You know, just the topic generates so much intense feeling that it's fascinating. You could do a PhD document on sociology just on Bigfoot researchers or Bigfoot, enthusiasts. So, yeah, that could be another great show right there, what you just said. Uh-huh. So we'll do that. In the meantime, I'm almost out of time, unfortunately. I have to leave. I would encourage everyone to go visit our website at thebigfootshow.com. To find out more about the show, they could go to thebigfootforums.com to talk about the show. They could go to... what's your website, Scott?
Well, walkpct.com. That's where I do have my my DVDs about the Pacific Crest Trail.
Your video offerings.
Yes, and if they're interested in Squatching and Journey Towards Squatched, which are now available on one DVD, they can go to Amazon. Just search under Squatching.
Highly recommended. I love those things. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. Very good. I still haven't watched your walking videos.
Oh,
They did turn up. I do have them, but I've just had time. But I'll tell you what, I've got to fly to Belfast in the morning for a job. I'm going to be away for a few days. I will pack them and watch them in some dull hotel somewhere.
Good. And I think you'll like the story, Monty Dodge's footprint find. It's in the first film, print he found in Northern California in 1977. In my opinion, I think it's one of the best prints ever found, most naturalistic-looking prints I've ever found.
Mm-hmm. It's a great print. It's a great print.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, sometime in the fall.
Nah, it'll be sooner than that.
Okay, we're done.